Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Shoo. Absolutely loving your contribution. 086-000-00959. Continue to send the voice notes as well on 063-688-0959. I do see your tweets as well. At Kaya on air, you can tag me at Pimelo Modene. I want us to analyze all of this that we're hearing. You know, we heard a lot from yesterday. We're hearing a lot today. I keep saying, you know, so much happens in 24 hours in politics. But from where we were last week, this time, sure, the landscape has changed a heck of a lot. Dr. Sphamandla Zondi is a political analyst who's on the line with us to assist us through all of this that's happening at the moment. Dr. Zondi, thanks for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. Good evening to the listeners as well.
Prof, we are here all waiting for cabinet to be announced. What seems to be the holdup?
Obviously that the president, who has the prerogative to appoint the cabinet, and but is bound by an agreement by which he committed to consult in that process. So I guess that if the consultation just within the ANC, when he last appointed his cabinet 5 years ago, if that took 4 days, we are now in the fifth day. You should expect that now consulting the ANC, which took 4 days, and now consulting 10 parties should take a lot longer. I think it would be like if they conclude the consultation this week, it's possible that it could move into next week. Fortunately, there is no timeline in which the president must appoint cabinet. We are just used to President Mbeki taking about 4 days, 3-4 days, and Ramaphosa taking about 4 days, and Zuma taking 1 day.
It seems to be more than just consultation. It seems to be bickering too, over and above just consultation. What do you think are the sticking points? Because we've seen these leaks. We saw the leak yesterday, the letter from the DA. Your sense of what could be the actual sticking point?
It is what the president offers to the parties by way of positions and power. And the parties are then allowed to indicate whether they are happy with the choices being made and propose a different way to do it. That would be a ticking point with the rest of the party. But with the DA, it's on the actual formula by which distribution works. It believes it must be equivalent in proportion to the number of seats or the percentage a party won in election, because in its view, that approximate what the people's will is. But the ANC sees it differently. It talks about almost even distribution, another model, worries about overrepresenting the DA. But of course, the DA is the second biggest party in the GNU. The ANC is the first biggest party, but the DA is the second biggest party, which it means it feels entitled to get the second biggest chunk of the allocation of positions.
What's the likelihood of all of this collapsing? That there is an absolute standoff between the ANC and the DA, and nobody at some point refuses to move. What's the likelihood of all of this collapsing?
There shouldn't be, because the statement of intent, their framework agreement, also makes provision for what happens when there is a deadlock. I think then that deadlock mechanism, breaking mechanism, will then kick in. It might require participation of people outside the two parties, but there is a deadlock breaking mechanism they already have. It begins, though, first with a sufficient consensus principle, that there must be sufficient consensus. It's just that in this matter, it would mean put the distribution before all these parties and get sufficient consensus, which is an agreement to a particular position by parties whose seats are equivalent to 60% of the National Assembly seat. Now, if you look at it, it is the ANC and the DA that are able to reach that 60%, with the DA at 21% and ANC at 40%. If the ANC avoids the DA and wants to go with the other eight parties, they unfortunately only get just above 50%. They don't get to 60%, which means in the end, yeah, if you use sufficient consensus, you'll have to go back to the DA.
Except, Prof, we've had both of them explain how and when they feel that mechanism would actually activate. The ANC says the impression was that this mechanism will only kick in once they've signed and the GNU is actually in place. One asks them, but you know, the statement didn't say that. It didn't say this will kick in at this point and not at that point. Yeah. So they're saying, no. It was in good faith. We just believed that this is only going to happen once everything has been completed. The DA says, no, it's right now. So right there, there isn't even consensus there on understanding what the statement of intent actually says.
It shouldn't be a difficulty, Pamela, because the statement says it is a statement of intent, which is a statement about the period prior to.
Yes, but if the principal member,
which means it applies immediately.
And that's obviously the understanding of the DA. But if the principal member says, that's not our understanding, that's not how we discussed it, we have a different understanding. And that's what I'm trying to ask you to say. If already... Yes. They don't seem to even be on the same page about what could seem quite obvious to all of us. Right there is a problem.
Yes. Then what was the basis for the DA election of president? The DA election of the team, of the speaker and of the national chairperson? I would ask the party, what then is the basis of counting the number of parties that are signing, if it is not itself an application of the principles that are in the letter of intent, that the parties must first agree with this or that. So now we are applying this agreement of intent. I think the real ticking point is that for them, with the ANC offering six ministerial positions and seven deputy ministerial positions, and the DA arguing for 11, they need to find midway between 6 and 11. I think that might be the compromise to be reached. And I think in the process, to avoid the deadlock breaking mechanism, the president is going to have to intervene between the two sides, because remember, he now no longer talks as an ANC president. Mm-hmm. He talks as a state president. So he can stand between the two of them once they've finished all this conversation and persuading each other, and then propose that what if we go for 8, which is short of 11, but it is above 6.
What I thought was interesting in the leaked letter by the DA is composition of government, right? The belly of government, DG roles and so on. And them insisting that for ministries that they're going to be in charge of, they'd also need to consider the roles of the DG and see if they cannot have influence on that, because to their argument is that, you know, the ANC, because of their policy of cadre deployment, they may have deployed people that may not want to cooperate with them. I would argue that it goes both ways. This would also apply for the DA too. So it makes it difficult then for the smaller parties to, let's say in inverted commas, be rewarded and to be part of government. What then becomes of these smaller parties if the two major parties are bickering about big positions, even about the formation of government at that level?
I think they would find each other because they have numbers. It's in the nature of negotiations that one party puts its number very high and the responding party puts its number very low, knowing that they will come somewhere to the middle. So it might come into the middle where the DA gets 7 or gets 8 ministerial positions, and the ANC gets somewhere in the region of 14, which is about double the DA, and then the remainder, which should be about 6-7, goes to the other parties. It should work out, but it's just that it's a bit of hard bargaining, and I am confident that they will come to a compromise, and it won't be any of the two numbers being bended about by the two parties.
I want to take calls. Dr. Selby is calling us from Orange Farm. Dr. Selby, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. How are you?
I'm good, Dr. Selby. How are you?
I'm blessed beyond measure. Good evening, my brother.
Good evening, Ngate.
How are you there?
I am good, sir, and how are you?
I am blessed beyond measure. No, Pamelo, I want to talk about the issue of controllers and ANC. I don't really believe that ANC will be able to meet the demand of controllers as long as DA is behind ANC. Because I didn't ever heard about Koning van der Merwe being a member of controllers. And as long as there's no Koning van der Merwe in controllers, then DA will never even consider anything that comes from controllers.
I hear you. Prof, your response to that? So obviously, yeah. Prof, there is quite publicly a dissatisfaction with even those who are aligned to the ANC. We earlier on even spoke to the ANC Veterans League, and there seems to be dissatisfaction. There seems to be an ununified ANC, either member, supporter, and I'm not sure that everybody is singing from the same hymn book when it comes to this formation. What do you make of that?
Tamelo, the ANC was once very large. The ANC was once a very large, broad church, and it had a space for everyone, even during the liberation struggle. Could unite everyone, could accommodate everyone, had the capacity to do that. And after attaining state power, then also had the resources of the state, by which it is able to accommodate anyone. But the ANC has been in decline. The ANC has been suffering a huge decline, and it has had the biggest decline ever, about 17%, loss about 17% from 57 to 40. The biggest, it's catastrophic. It can't be expected that it would be able to maintain the largesse it once had. It would be able to accommodate everyone the way it has. It is definitely difficult to accommodate the tripartite alliance right now. It's very, very tough, very poor position to distribute, very little, much more limited access to resources to distribute to everyone. But also there's no time and capacity to do that to deal with a lot of things. With the GNU set to become its biggest preoccupation, it will have much less time to be engaging all these other partners that are all over. And I guess that first the tripartite alliance, COSATU and SACT, should come to terms with that. It has declined. And secondly, the other groups like Contralesa, like SANCO, like many others that it has been associated with, must just realize that it's time for adjustment, it's time for realignment. The nature of the relationship might change to look warm, but still a little warm. And they must just accept that the ANC might not be able to make the commitments they want it to make because it's no longer calling the shots. It now has to consult the DA and seven other parties that are a part of the coalition, the eight other parties that are part of the GNU that is being established now.
That's obviously...
And therefore what the guy is saying is actually true. The frustration you hear from the controversy, it's part of the pain of adjustment that they are going to make. And another factor is that a lot of their members have now joined the NK party too. So the idea of the controversy as a terrain for the ANC alone is now also being contested. Now, ANC is being contested in that constituency. That it has been contested in the worker constituency and contested in the council constituency, and the ANC has to fight for its survival. It may not be able to maintain the largesse it has been able to sway over a long period of time.
And that's obviously the alliance partners and so on. Let's talk about the people who voted for the ANC, who are not necessarily able to give the ANC formal feedback on how they feel about this. They've just gone out, they've cast their vote, they gave their, you know, their trust to the ANC, and here we are. And I mean, I sit in a chair where people call in and they are already sending us those messages. We're unhappy. We voted for them, but we're unhappy. How do you think this is going to affect the elections? The upcoming elections, either, you know, the local upcoming elections or the national.
Local government elections.
Yes.
The ANC has already indicated that once the whole process has been concluded, it is going to go to its supporters at a regional, provincial, and provincial level, and even at branch level.
All right, we've lost that call. We're going to connect back to it in a short while. That's Sipamandla Zondi, a political analyst. I don't know, we just failed to, I don't know what happened to that line, but we'll connect back to him and we'll continue to take your calls on 086-000-0959. Very happy to also look at those voice notes on 063-688-0959. I'll also look at those tweets. Let me take a quick break. I'll be back with more after this. Well, thanks for staying with us. Professor Sipamandla Zondi is back with us on a better line. 086-000-0959. The WhatsApp notes can come through on 063-688-0959. You're obviously very welcome to give us your take, your concerns as well. Prof, thanks again for staying with us. You were mentioning earlier on that the ANC has made it quite public that once all of this settles, they will go out and speak to the constituency and tell them exactly what brings them here. Do you think that's...
Apologies for getting cut off.
Not a problem.
Yes. The challenge the ANC is going to have to confront is that because it has to wait until the process is concluded, and the process is taking long. Elections were 3 weeks ago. Perhaps this will end up happening after 5 weeks. By the time they go back to their supporters, supporters have already been persuaded by whatever view they have. It might be a bit too late for the ANC to be able to explain itself before supporters that have been so disgruntled that have already concluded what is happening. And then the ANC will seem like it is trying to spin things or hoodwink the people. But it is something they cannot avoid at the moment. But I think it was possible for them, though, that they mobilize all their leaders and they send update communication to all of those leaders. And those leaders talk to their supporters in the language that they know and keep them, give them updates every point of the way.
Mm.
And the second thing is that the ANC, by pushing itself, which is quite good, is very interesting, it's very encouraging, believing that it should only fight for a win. It means it did not prepare its support base for a possible loss.
Mm-hmm.
It kept on saying it is playing to win. But the problem with that is that you don't actually have a plan B. You don't prepare people for an eventual outcome that it has. It may seem like we have fooled people to believing that by filling up all the stadia and stuff, they will end up with a 60, they were even thinking about 65, 66% of the vote. So it could have prepared people earlier so that they don't have to prepare people right now. But again, people are a contested place. It's not only them who speak to their bases. It's also the other party. The most damaging one will come from the left, by the way. Both the MK, the MKP, and the EFF have deliberately been talking up this message that the ANC is a sellout. They will talk it up until people start to believe it because of what they see and how the DA is playing it out in the public. By the time they come, they would already been seen as a sellout, and I think that's a difficulty for them as well.
The ANC gained some momentum, actually, at the very, very end, at the tail end of the campaign trail. Because when you look at their own poll, I'm not even talking about other people's poll, they were preparing, they're saying their polls were telling them that they are going to be hovering around 39%, 37 to 39%. So they saw that coming. They build a bit of momentum and, they did get 39.7% in the end, combined provincial and national. But the point I wanted to make is that they gained momentum, in my view, on two things. The one was that they were gunning for people who believed that they were on the path to renewal, on this renewal path. That's the one thing. Secondly, you saw quite a number of people who were excited about their foreign policy. For the first time in a very long time, this human rights position that South Africa had decided to take, that role, and pushing that policy position internationally. Being in this GNU, when you see the DA itself saying that they want to be a part of the foreign, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs means that that may not quite happen. We've seen Zizi Kotwa being sworn in today. That changes everything in how we perceive the ANC with regards to their renewal ticket. Where does that then leave them in the public of in the public arena where people are watching this and saying, "Well, where's the ANC we voted for on those bases?"
Yes, you are right in saying the ANC's own internal research and polling had indicated to them what they should prepare for, but it seems they did not prepare for that because they believed that the impossible was possible. Now, it is okay to believe that. It is okay to have confidence. It is okay to fight to win, play to win. But it's also important that you provide for the reality you already know. Privilege to know beforehand that this might be a loss. Then you start at that point to prepare your people for this, because if you don't, if you lose them now, you are unlikely to regain them by the time you get to 2025 elections. So you might be losing them and therefore losing the election in 2 years' time in advance. And that's one of the biggest difficulties. Then you must bank on the fact that if this GNU works, it will not just work in the sense of that it is stable, it doesn't collapse, but in the work in the sense that they see parties coming together and they start to create qualitative change. People start to see water flowing from their taps. People start to see jobs increase. People start to see investments come in the country. People start to see poverty reducing. And on that basis, then you start to get claw back your results in 2022. And that's in 2 years' time. But that is a very risky thing to depend on, given the fact that in the past 10 years, 15 years, especially in the past 10 to 12 years, the performance has been sluggish. What would happen differently now that would enable it to get forward? But people have also been saying, there's a thing in politics we call the advantage of incumbency. Mm-hmm. The advantage of incumbency, Pamela, is this, that when the current government was elected in 2019, mm-hmm. it then had 4 or 5 years of campaign time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whereas the opposition parties only have 5 months of mm-hmm. campaign. Mm-hmm. But the government party campaigns from day one. It is depends on its attitude. If its attitude is to campaign from day one, then it uses state power and resources to cause change in people's lives from the very beginning, reporting progress. And that's what I thought President Ramaphosa would do, coming from business. Every 3 months, you're reporting big things that have been achieved. Every 3 months, doing big things until people start to see that this party, this government is working. We don't do rallies at the end like we're outside government. You rally people with your performance, not with the performance of artists and musicians in the dying days of a term. I think that's where they lost it.
So let's talk about the other parties who are now outside of the GNU, some in this progressive caucus, others not, choosing not to be a part of it. I want to start with the EFF. They have said, their very first sitting, they said, "Speaker, we have sent you a letter. We would like to come back to that Palapala issue. Please consider it." You know, they didn't do better in this election. Do you think that's going to claw them back some votes?
Yes, the EFF kind of slightly declined in its vote, and it did not grow its votes. It was damaged in certain areas by the rise of the MK party. That's very obvious. It was damaged in certain places by the turnout of youth, which is their base. But it was not a disaster. It was a very small decline. But they must be worried that it did not grow, because they expected to grow. What they have decided to do already is that, knowing that the MK, because it's been pushed to the sideline by the fact that we had a very strong governing party in the ANC and a very strong and dominant DA in the opposition branches, And therefore, it had to find curveballs by moving beyond the DA in order to appeal. And that's why it would cause chaos. It could speak out. It will be very jovial and stuff like that to try and do it. Now that the DA has joined government, so the JNNT on one side, it sees now spaces open up on the opposition side, and it has immediately changed its strategy from loud disruption and other ways of appealing to what the DA was doing, which is arguments, petitions, resolutions, and pushing arguments and setting agenda on the floor of parliament. And that, I guess, that is what it is doing now. It wants to do it together with MK and ATM in a progressive caucus, and that says you must expect a different kind of parliament this time. There will be a very awkward position for the DA, because naturally it is an opposition, and it's been very good in that. That's what it's been used to since the beginning of this new era. They now have to learn a new way to be in, act like we are in power when we are actually half in power, mm-hmm. and the ANC act like we are fully in power when we now have half the power. You have very awkward position, and these opposition parties will not be able to poke holes in this uncomfortable cohabitation between these two parties. Mm-hmm. And they've already indicated that the message that they're conveying to parliament, and therefore to the eyes of the public that watch parliament, would be that the ANC is a sellout. Mm-hmm. And in order to force the ANC to disown the DA in public and then face the might of the DA, because the DA is the party partner in their GNU. There's so division in the GNU, and they will be able to do that because it's much easier to do it when you're in opposition than to do much when you are in government and in power.
The MK party today obviously now went and sent their 58 people to parliament, and now that's happened. They've sworn them in. But a very interesting person that we all saw being sworn in as well was Dr. Hlophe, who is now going to be the party leader in parliament, very different to what we occasionally would have known to be the party whip. They're very clear, this is not the party whip, this will be the party leader in parliament. Just talk to me about his presence in the MK party in parliament. What impact will that have on shaping the perception we have of MK party?
Already, his presence gives that sense of bit of dignity, that sense of a little bit of logic, that sense of a little bit of robust argument, mm-hmm. and kind of professional politics, and then it gives a sense of that. But it still gives a little bit of grit, because he, for the past 29 years, has shown a lot of grit, mm-hmm. from the bench. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any of the judges that we have that has been as articulate and so as insistent and sometimes as upfront about transformation issues. Mm-hmm. As Dr. Hlophe. Mm. I think that you're like going to see that dynamic express itself. The EFF having moved closer to that direction themselves, mm-hmm. but with that ability to be abrasive, and then you have the MK, and they complement each other, and sometimes they're very similar to each other. Mm. We should expect that they work very closely together with the ATM, and their exclusion, their being outside of the GNU, will give them an opportunity to really build up their support. You know why, Pimelo?
Yeah.
It's much easier to claim things and say things,
yes.
when you're not going to implement them. It is those in power who must show you that you can do it differently,
yes.
but they won't be able to do that. But yes. They are in a very tight position. The DA will suddenly realize it was much nicer
to be opposition.
Leader of opposition. Now being in government, because you will have the Minister of Agriculture. But when your fellow minister of another party of health, when they fail, you somehow carry the burden too.
Yeah. So quickly, just tell me, what with those in the middle, your Build One South Africa, your Action SA, who haven't formally formed any sort of, you know, caucus with others. They don't have a formation with any other people. They've got very few seats. I mean, how effective are they going to be in parliament?
I think, as they have indicated, they said they wanted to be a constructive opposition, which means expect them to go with the governing party on certain issues, to the governing GNU on certain issues, and then depart on other issues, and almost speak the language of the DA, the language of the DA in opposition, because they're similar to the DA in policy terms, similar to the DA in ideological terms. Mm. So they kind of be DA-like in many ways.
Yes.
So DA without the leader of the opposition status.
Yeah.
So they would maintain that DA position which the DA has vacated together with the Freedom Front.
Yeah.
So I think they see a space there, perhaps along ACDP.
Mm-hmm.
I think the two of them may actually work a little closer together. Oh, is ACDP in
No. Yes, I was actually going to go there to say, for those who are in the GNU, who are much smaller, who are not going to get the big positions and the big portfolios, you know, is this a big risk for them that they will probably go mute?
Yes, I think in some cases there's two types of parties. There are parties that are simply a mechanism for a leader to get a job.
Yes, yeah.
So they would get a job a leader is looking for. We've had that before, and we've had it for a period of time. No worries about growth and all that. Long as you can get those seats at in Parliament. We're not even thinking about impacting Parliament, pushing certain points very strongly. No, just today, part of the participate, the leader benefits. We have that. We have that dynamic very clearly. But then there are those parties that are small, but they want to make a meaningful impact. So whether they're in the GNU, like Al Jamaa, want to be in the GNU, but want to use the GNU to influence it, to influence policy. And they're very clear policies that they want to pursue. They're going to pursue them. But we have the ACDP that perhaps wants to give space to the leader and its leaders to be there, not their specific hard policy ideas they want to pursue. And so you have both of them, and they would benefit in the manner in which they want to benefit. The ACDP would benefit in the sense of getting a position, maybe even a deputy minister position in government. That's fine.
Mm.
And then for the Al Jamaa, whatever position they get, whether a minister or deputy minister, what their benefit would be measured by the points they push in cabinet in certain policy areas, especially foreign policy. And then an economic policy.
Are we seeing the end of the PAC? They don't even agree on which side they're on. Some are saying they're in the GNU, some are saying we're not in the GNU. They've been dwindling support for a while. Is this probably the end of them?
Yes. I'm a little clearer about what ACDP is trying to get out of this and what the PA is trying to get out of this. What good and others I said get out of it, and what Al Jamaa wants to get up. I'm not quite clear what PAC wants to do in there. Quite different from every one of those parties, really a left party in the true sense of the word. But they haven't quite indicated whether they're going there to influence positions, to defend certain positions, or they are going in there in order just to participate in government. But it is indicative of a PAC that has become weakened over a period of time in terms of content, and it's now become a party, a one-seat party, where the president of the party secures his life for 5 years by being the president of the party. It seems to me it won't be very clear what their impact is going to be. It won't be very clear how they benefit from all of this. If this harms the GNU, they may be actually among the biggest losers and follow Azapo, where Azapo has gone. This change in dynamic has pushed Azapo out of government. It started with the APC of Temba Kgodi, who are in the same space, Pan-African parties, and then it was Azapo in this last election. The PAC might be the next because of the position they are taking right now. But if they make use of the GNU very well, remain very visible, push for certain things in a clear way, maybe their traditional voters may reward them.
Appreciate your time. Professor Siphamandla Zondi, really thank you so much for your take and for making time for us. Good evening and thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, Beth.
It's 10 o'clock. I'm so sorry, guys. We're slightly late, but I'll be back tomorrow at 8. Thanks, everybody.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.